Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the OIES China Energy Programme. My name is Michal Maidan. I'm director of the China Energy Programme at the Institute. I am joined today by my colleague, Anders Hovey, who is Senior Research Fellow at the Institute. We are recording this podcast on the 20th of March, and that's almost 10 days after the conclusion of China's annual legislature known as the Two Sessions. Unsurprisingly, it was much watched and anticipated, so we will take stock of what happened at the Two Sessions, the related work reports that have come out. We have also published a comment discussing the key takeaways from the Two Sessions. But we also want to put this in the context of a comment that we published earlier this year that was entitled China's Policy Pendulum Shifts Back Toward Environmental Protection, but Will Bureaucracy Get in the Way? So really, we want to talk about some of the kind of policy trends and what they mean for energy policies and markets. Anders, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
So let's start with the much-discussed Two Sessions. I mean, that's been all over the news and the commentary for the past sort of couple of weeks. For you, what were the key themes?
For me, I would say that the key theme was mixed messages and not a lot of fireworks. There is, as one would expect, a lot of focus on growth, but not much emphasis on specific drivers of growth. We're going to talk about the new productive forces, but aside from just generally strategy of upgrading industry, there's not a lot of reform, and certainly stimulus is not going to be the main approach to bringing back growth. We know, of course, that local debt is a major constraint for the economy along with the real estate sector, and so that just is going to continue for this year. I'd also mention that there were a few key highlights from an energy and environmental perspective that I was looking at. The clear instruction that the ETS should expand, that green certificates should continue to be a focus of work this year. Those are the certificates that are given to renewable energy producers. And finally, the fossil fuel intensity target, which is a fudge of the earlier energy intensity targets that China was set to miss. Michal, what do you think of that rundown? And where do we stand on energy specifically? Once again, it seems that energy and especially oil, gas, and electricity demand have held up really well in 2023, despite all the economic headwinds. It sort of seems like that might be the case again in 2024. What do you think?
It's been really interesting, I agree with you, to sort of put the energy questions in the macro context. And I think we do need to look back a little bit before we look forward. And of course, we've discussed this in previous podcasts and previous comments as well. This focus on growth, but of course this year we don't have what everybody was expecting for last year, the sort of revenge consumption or, you know, the kind of rebound from post-COVID, which was arguably weaker than people expected. But we don't have that. And then we've got similar GDP targets with, as you mentioned, tighter fiscal constraints. So a lot of people are sort of scratching their heads around how is this going to happen or just assuming that the numbers will be fudged at the end of the year. But again, I think it is interesting to look back at what happened in 2023. Again, the economy was relatively weak. The real estate sector was down. There was consumption that held up, but energy demand was extremely strong across the board, both energy and commodities. Data for the first 2 months of this year show a pretty strong start as well. We've had high imports of coal. That was probably in part offsetting some of the drop in domestic production as we've had some inspections. But oil and gas imports and production were all up. So again, very much a continuation of that 2023 trend. I think that continuation of a trend of uncertainty and mixed messages. But again, that disconnect between weak sentiment, seemingly weak macro environment. We don't know how growth is going to be maintained, and yet it's still looking strong.
And what do you expect for oil and gas demand in 2024 overall? Would you expect a similar story there?
So we expect a pretty strong year. For oil demand growth, we see it slowing down from last year. Last year, the pickup in driving, in sort of hospitality, tourism, air travel within China and outside of China really supported transport fuels. But we had an extraordinarily strong year in terms of oil demand growth at 1.6 or 1.7 million barrels a day, with a lot of chemicals as well. So we do expect oil demand growth to increase by 600,000 to 700,000 barrels a day, which in market terms is on the relatively high end of the estimates. I have to say that there's a huge amount of uncertainty this year, and there's a wide range of forecasts going from 300,000 barrels a day to sort of 800,000 barrels a day on China demand. I guess the weaker estimates point to gasoline demand having peaked because of high EV penetration, diesel demand slowing because there's no industrial activity, and chemicals because there's overcapacity, there's only so much you can grow. I think, again, we're a bit more optimistic that, yes, we have a lot of EV penetration, but there is still some increase in gasoline consumption. Part of it is geographic in China, but part of it is also because you still have a relatively large ICE fleet. Chemicals continue to grow, again, albeit at a slower pace. Diesel is a really interesting question because despite the slowdown in construction, there is a lot that's coming from freight. But what we saw towards the end of last year that with lower gas prices, we're getting fuel switching from diesel to LNG trucking, actually, which presents upsides to gas, where we see another quite strong year of gas demand growth. However, I think in this context, it is important to say that policy matters hugely. So the direction of travel, how much emphasis the government places on fuel switching, on reducing local air pollution, on promoting the kind of the targets for the 2030 peaking and the 2060 net zero. 2060 is still a bit further away, but the 2030 targets are really important. So to what extent the government is pushing forward with environmental targets does matter even for this year. And that's where, again, the two sessions are somewhat confusing because there seems to be a lot of support for the hardware of renewables, right? More industrial activity, more productive forces, but a little less about the software. And I guess this is where what you mentioned earlier comes in, the energy intensity target being quite low, but also sort of being tweaked and reformulated. So what do you make of that? What just happened there?
Taking it back to the software hardware point, we often emphasize that despite hopes for reform and structural changes in the economy, the institutions tend to last. And one of those institutions is government planning targets, which are defined as mandatory, of which one of them was the energy intensity target, which was not just some five-year planning target, but in addition was also a part of the China nationally determined contribution commitment internationally. So redefining the target that was basically on track to be missed amounts to essentially setting a new target or essentially watering down the target. Now, it might be strategic and have more of a long-term purpose, which is that we want to focus on not worrying so much about capping energy consumption. But nevertheless, it does seem to amount to both missing the target as well as, to some extent, weakening an institution which had been important to the operation and planning of policy in the energy and environmental space, which is the energy intensity target, publishing that, recording that, and holding people accountable at the local and industry levels. So for this year, 2.5% energy intensity reduction target, and then that, assuming that GDP goes up by about 5%, allows energy use to rise still by about 2.5%. And now China, you know, committed to 18% improvement in carbon intensity from 2020 to 2025. We were only one-third of the way there, already 3 years into the plan. So there were concerns, and we expressed some of those earlier about maybe the way to meet these targets is going to be some very abrupt action, like closing down factories at the end of the month in December, electric power cuts. And those are really artificial cuts that have helped China achieve mandatory targets in the past, such as recently as 2020. But they do hurt the economy, and they don't achieve any structural change in efficiency or emissions or industry restructuring more broadly. So I do think it makes sense for the government to avoid that. And you saw that in the guidance from the work report. You know, the provincial officials, local officials should not be taking any very abrupt actions that would damage the economy for environmental purposes. Of course, I do see the weakening of this important commitment as a significant event nevertheless, in part because I think that the nationally determined contribution targets were set as kind of a business as usual conservative target from the beginning. So not upholding them does suggest some less focus on these things. I don't think we're going to be hearing the phrase, if you can't do it, don't say it, for a little while at least.
I want to follow up on that. There are two interesting dimensions. One is, of course, which targets and which guidance do we pay attention to? There's the government work reports that look at the year ahead and focus on what needs to be accomplished this year. There are longer standing targets. There are the NDCs. There's also the 14th five-year plan. And so I guess there is a question of which targets matter more or matter more at which point in time. And you just said that some things could be tweaked. There was a fudge or a tweak in the language this year. Can you talk about the fact that it seems to be referring to fossil fuel intensity rather than energy intensity more broadly and what that means?
Essentially, it enables China to achieve its 2025 target and to show that it's achieving the reductions in fossil fuel intensity that were previously forecast for energy intensity. And because non-fossil energy is rising as a share, that means that the fossil fuel intensity number will look more attractive than the energy intensity number. And so you see that for 2023, where the energy intensity actually went up, which is quite unusual. You know, we should be targeting for reductions, especially when GDP numbers are rising. You know, the very purpose of adopting this intensity number was it enables a country, United States, China, any country, to claim credit for reducing something, even though actually the overall absolute amount of that thing, which we would desire to control at some level, is still rising. And so now saying, well, energy intensity is showing a rise now instead of a decline, so now we're switching over to fossil fuels. It clearly, I think, relates to optics as well as the fact that the targets were on track to be missed. In terms of other items from the government work report, Mikhail, what else does it say? And especially I'd like to refer to the excellent graph that we've done a few times now showing the word count of some of the keywords. What's your takeaway from that analysis this year? And what are the main points emphasized by Li Qiang, such as, for example, the lack of stimulus?
Word counts are always a joy for any China watcher with these big policy documents as they come out. But I think they are instructive. And what tentatively the word counts sort of tell us this year, first of all, is slightly less focus on security and stability, but a huge still focus on economic growth, innovation, technology, the new productive forces sort of loom large. We've seen for the first time the inclusion of the three new industries that we discussed at length in previous podcasts. This is lithium-ion batteries, electric vehicles, and solar panels as being the drivers of economic activity and increasingly exports going forward. So those were clearly mentioned. Green was a word that actually figured more prominently than in past cases. Coal was downplayed. And that's where, again, the word counts can be a bit tricky. You sort of need to read the context. So there's a lot of green. There's a lot of green industrial policies. Again, the hardware rather than the software. There's less emphasis on coal, but the words that are used are pretty prominent and pretty significant. Coal remains the ballast stone of, you know, the Chinese energy system and is therefore a key part of the Chinese energy system. More broadly, again, it is this kind of shift towards industrial activity. In last year's work reports, consumption was going to be the biggest driver of growth. This year, it is sort of lower down the list of priorities versus industry, and these new productive forces. It is also instructive that Xi Jinping went to visit the Jiangsu delegation. That was his first port of call after the main meetings, which again is a big industrial hub and points to this focus on industry. And we did talk about this a little bit in our 2024 sort of year ahead outlook, which is also available on the OIS website. It is going to be very difficult for China to sustain this industrial growth momentum, in part because there is massive overcapacity in China. Also, and even though this leads to lower prices and lower costs, the appetite for protectionist measures, the rise of green industrial policies elsewhere, especially in Europe and the US, is increasing. So there's growing resistance to the flood of Chinese exports out of China. And that's exactly what the government is sort of banking on this year. It is we produce more, even though the economy might be slowing and we might be able to consume less. We're just going to export all of this stuff. Now, arguably, you can sort of say, again, this is a bit of the short-termism of it. EU protective policies, anti-dumping duties and tariffs, all the investigations are ongoing this year, but any tariffs are really likely to kick in 2025. And even if you think about potential sort of big changes in US policies following a potential Trump victory, that only happens in 2025. So again, you sort of push in 2024 and figure it out in 2025. But as you were saying, that seems sort of short-termist. And I know we often have this vision of the Chinese government as having long-term plans, long-term targets, being able to play the long game. Here, it feels like there's, again, a bit of a tension between the short-term needs and the long game. And speaking of the long game, which, of course, China has been very much ahead of the curve and a front mover on EVs, seem to be quite a few developments on that front, again, as part of the three new industries, a big export push. What is happening there? We're hearing about overcapacity in China, price wars again. Are EVs going to be cheaper than ever? Are companies going to go bust? What's going to happen this year on the EV front, and what are you watching?
All of the above is my answer. Basically, the price war is raging, and it's really quite spectacular, the prices that are being offered now on vehicles. But just to back up a bit and talk about the overall macro impact, China has in the past suffered from overcapacity, both in basic industries, steel, power sector, of course, coal we've talked about, but also in these new industries where I think, although China was definitely ahead of the curve, and I think that we should also note that some of the policies that promoted electric vehicles resulted in the growth of this new sector, but it was, going back on a year-to-year basis, a lot more ad hoc than people might necessarily realize. And I think the central government, to some extent, in putting this phrase three new on the EV battery and solar industries, and hoping that this would also be a major driver of growth, is basically bandwagoning on something that had not been anticipated by any government plan specifically. The EV sales have far outpaced targets, for example. In addition, what the local governments are doing also seems to be a case of jumping on something that was seen as a driver of growth and something that's helpful for reputation. So we saw a number of local government announcements and speeches from officials saying, NEVs, new energy vehicles, are going to be a key focus for our region. Clearly, that's been a driver of growth, and so people are hoping that it will be. So the question is, will it be a driver of growth in 2024, 2025? Overall, it does look good. Even though there's overcapacity in the industry leading to severe price cuts and, as you said, some companies going bankrupt outright. EV sales held up in the first 2 months of the year, 33% market share, which is down from 40% market share at the end of last year, but about in line with what we'd like to see in order to hit that 40 to 45% expectation that the industry had set, the guidance from industry. As we said, there's overcapacity in batteries. Also, the prices for raw materials have come down a lot from COVID times. And you're seeing that now flowing very much into prices, where BYD has now reduced the cost of its entry-level Seagull EV down to 70,000 RMB. So that's under $10,000 for a new car. And XPeng had announced that it will introduce a new premium EV brand, which is 50% cheaper than the going rate for premium EVs. So a lot going on in the price space that is definitely not just designed to continue to expand that domestic market, but is also going to be designed to appeal to the global market, because the battery production numbers for this year, 2024, are much larger than what the Chinese market will be able to absorb. And so as a result of that, there are a lot of policy announcements, and you saw a major new a paper come out from the central government encouraging cooperation and innovation at the international level and the setting up of production bases. And so that would include places like Southeast Asia for the Asian market. So not just targeting those places that would have perhaps some major tariff barriers. Mexico, which would clearly be related to the U.S. market, even though there are already some major important barriers from the Biden administration, even before any potential change in administration. And then Morocco, for the European market. And I think that will be interesting to see how that plays out in importing countries' strategies now that Chinese EV imports have arrived at scale in the European and other markets. So yeah, I've been surprised that the mention of EVs in the government work report and then the three new industries overall have not necessarily been paired with major new policies to promote them domestically, which, after all, this is how these sectors scaled in the first place.
I think that's really interesting, right? This sort of build, baby, build mentality. We've got growth. We've got, it's not the stimulus that the markets have been expecting or waiting for. It's not the real estate boom. but it is a huge amount of industrial activity. There seems to be license to create new sort of heavy industries or industries that support heavy industry. But how does that then sit with what we wrote just a couple of months ago and what we've been talking about, which is the kind of pendulum swinging back towards environmental protection? That was very much based on some important developments over the past year, especially sort of the last quarter of 23, when growth targets seemed to be within reach. We saw quite a few new policy papers come out that talked about, you know, beautiful China, MIIT, Ministry of Industry and Information Technology on greening the manufacturing sector, an action plan on air quality that, again, is quite important for diesel and gas. But in general, sort of there's action plan for air quality that we haven't had since 2021. So lots of things that tended to go in the direction of tighter environmental protection. And of course, the interim 14 five-year plan, the kind of mid 14 five-year plan assessment that showed, as you discussed earlier, that we're not on track for some of the energy intensity targets. And yet the two sessions seem to go maybe not the completely opposite direction, but a slightly opposite direction and say, it's fine. For now, we care about the economy, the environment and climate are on a back burner. I mean, were we completely wrong? Were we off base with our pendulum swinging back to environmental protection? How do you square that circle and think about this?
First of all, I'd like to emphasize that when we talked about the pendulum swinging, we were thinking about a very slow-moving pendulum and not necessarily something on the scale or importance of the 2030-2060 dual carbon or carbon peaking carbon neutrality targets. And in addition, we acknowledged that China is constrained by those institutional factors, by the slow pace of reforms, which we mentioned repeatedly, and also by, of course, the economic challenges. And then in addition, we always understand that there are policy documents coming out in a variety of fields, which send mixed messages no matter what. So you might think this pendulum is located on a ship, which is bobbing on the waves or something like that. So it might be swinging, but it's also moving stochastically. In terms of what I see from the two sessions, there was nothing in the two sessions work report or the news flow around the two sessions that would support this pendulum swinging hypothesis. I didn't see any indication of a trend towards environmental policy overall. The expansion of the carbon emissions trading system, the ETS, to aluminum and cement, it's been anticipated for a very long time. The fact that it will be only simulated trading means that it has very limited impact. Expanded penalties on carbon are important, and they've driven the price for carbon in China upwards. But of course, that's a free allocation of allowances, benchmark-based trading. So how big of an impact when it's really these big targets like the energy intensity being switched to fossil intensity that would have a much larger impact on actual emissions or the environment? You know, statements that officials should avoid drastic economy straining actions. And then most worrying for me, since I follow the renewables sector, is the hints that renewable curtailment might have to come back because of grid constraints. And that was the reason for explaining curtailment that peaked back in 2016. Now there's five times more renewables, but no curtailment. But of course, there's massive new additions of coal power. So provinces seek to maximize their uptake of the provincial electricity production as opposed to importing electricity. So I think that that's a very worrying sign, is that curtailment might come back, and that might also really have the effect of slowing the energy transition, which up until now, the capacity numbers have been followed by increases of utilization. So it seemed like China was on track or more than on track towards meeting those dual carbon goals. On the plus side, I think that there is more long-term thinking, and the signal very much is that China remains committed to the dual carbon goals, towards air quality improvements, and of course, the three new industries. I only see a few clouds on those horizons in terms of the capacity expansion of wind and solar, for example. I think that's going to continue this year, and I believe that assuming that the economic growth and energy consumption growth remains roughly in line with last year, then we wouldn't see any dramatic increase in coal consumption or new coal plant capacity being needed. I think that there could be the possibility even that the long anticipated peak in power sector emissions comes and that coal use begins to actually start to decline in lines with the Sunny Lands Declaration of last fall. you know, there are a few other policies that I'm following. Of course, green certificates, this may help raise the ambition of provinces and industries towards consuming renewables, which up until now has been a bit of a weak point. So I do think that there's some pros and some cons, or some positives, some negatives from the two sessions, but I wouldn't say that it actually supports the pendulum swing hypothesis.
And I think I want to, you know, take a slightly optimistic note, which is, I guess, unusual for me, but to echo what you've said, I mean, this is certainly what we've observed from the two sessions. I think the commentary has very much conveyed that it was weak on environment and climate. But I think, first of all, we need to unpack some of that. There has been no change from, you know, what we saw at the end of 2023, at least for oil, for instance. Oil product exports are still to be capped. Oil imports that were used as a form of stimulus last year, import quotas to independent refiners, those have been capped and have not been renewed. So there is some caution on that front. So I think there is this, I guess, work hand in hand of some of the longer term objectives. And they're clearly complicated by what is happening with coal additions, but they're not off the table. There is still room for things to change and to evolve, for market dynamics to play out. And I think parts of the bureaucracy are still operating on those long-term targets, putting sort of meat to the bones and figuring out how we get there and continuing to develop policies that enable China to meet those longer-term targets. But of course, we do discuss these short-term adjustments. It only goes to show the things that we try to highlight constantly, that China is not a monolith, that there is not, you know, one vision from the central government, and that translates into perfect implementation. There are these pendulum swings and they move around. And that was also why we did choose the pendulum swing. It comes back and forth and it moves. But the mixed messages, I think, was one thing that we keep coming back to. That is a constant. That is something that has remained constant. But these mixed messages, especially for provincial officials, for industry, that do take the longer term targets quite seriously, that see CBAM and other carbon tariffs and other issues looming and have to adjust, and they realize that the industry has to adjust to it. But at the same time, they are getting some of these mixed messages. So I guess the other thing that we will be watching out for is the third plenum, which is an important party meeting that was supposed to take place in October. Typically, third plenums discuss the economic outlook. We haven't had that one yet. It might still take place this year, and third plenums have been the occasion in the past where big ideas have come out. Now, this isn't to say that we are hoping that something is going to change dramatically or something radical will happen over the year, just to note that there is potential for another slight shift in the policy dynamics and in the macroeconomic environment. Although, as we write in the latest comment and as we've just discussed, the general direction of travel seems to be growth. We're not really sure what the measures are to support that growth other than a lot of industrial activity. But if it's more of the same as what we saw last year, then it is a relatively, potentially a relatively strong year for energy and potentially a weak year for the climate. Again, it kind of goes back to kicking the can down the road and a lot of catch up potentially in 2025, be that on the data and the numbers or just having to shut things down in order to meet numbers. But with that, I think we're going to have to stop here today. I'd like to thank you, Anders, for your time, for your thoughts, and of course to you, the audience, for joining us. I hope you've enjoyed our discussion. Please do check out our publications, our older podcasts as well. They are all available on our website. We welcome your feedback and your thoughts and look forward to our next discussion. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org. Thank you.